which was the mayoralty campaign of General Sessions Judge Jonah Goldstein on a fusion ticket, that is, Republican and liberal, for the mayoralty of New York in 1945. I became a research director of Judge Goldstein's campaign. And parenthetically, that was not only the beginning of my political life in an active sense, though I'd been a member of the Ivy Republican Club, LaGuardia's own political club, since 1932, as LaGuardia was my principal reason for being a Republican in a revulsion against the corrupt Tammany Hall system of New York City, of which my own father was a minute captain in a tiny area and actually distributed to the tenants of the tenement buildings in which he was the janitor the $2 or $3 per vote, which was handed out to him by Tammany Hall's primary captain in the area, who was a saloon keeper named Porges, P-O-R-G-E-S. Indeed, as I remember as a child, accompanying my father to Porges' saloon, which was at the corner of Rivington and Allen Street, and seeing that rather a dried-up old man, a typically Irish politician, with his derby, black derby, tilted back on his forehead, wearing not a jacket but a vest, like a faro dealer, and counting out for my father the necessary money which it would take to gain the votes of the tenants of the three tenement houses that my father janitored. Anyhow, coming back to 1945, Mayor LaGuardia, for some incomprehensible reason, instead of throwing his weight behind Judge Goldstein's fusion ticket, chose the challenges on his own through his own chosen successor, Newbold Morris, subsequently himself a fusion candidate for mayor, and resulted in bringing about the defeat of Judge Goldstein and the victory of Bill O'Dwyer, who then became mayor of New York.
Some 2 or 3 years later, I met Fiorello LaGuardia in the House of Representatives, where I was then serving, sitting on a bench, rather taking in the scene, but not participating too much, and not being recognized particularly by many of the members. It must be remembered that at this time, and by the way, he sat on the Republican side, on the benches on the Republican side. It must be remembered that by this time, the Republicans had a majority in the 80th Congress, that is 1947 and 1948 in the House, and that majority was largely attributable to some 80 veterans of World War II like myself, who had been newly elected in 1946 in the reaction against the meat rationing and other remains of war which President Truman was considered to be responsible for. At that time, the mayor told me about his feelings respecting the mayoralty. He felt that he had accomplished some things in the mayoralty and given New York a new image in the country, which especially pleased him. He kind of gave me the feeling that he'd hoped that he had made a good impression on his colleagues in the House and justified the fact that he left the House in order to go to the mayoralty of New York. And he said that the House of Representatives was his first love, that very often he had hoped that he would remain there throughout his life, that he found those his most satisfying personal years, and that he'd really felt that he burned himself out, these are his exact words, in the mayoralty of New York City. And that recollection has stuck with me many, many years, as there were various inducements and strong feelings on my part respecting running for mayor of New York. I've always remembered that personal experience of Fiorello LaGuardia. And indeed, it wasn't more than a year or two after that that he passed away early in his 60s. Well, back to the election of 1945, as I've already indicated, Jonah Goldstein was defeated. But I had come out of the campaign very creditably. I'd done a good job in my particular role of research director, and also undertook toward the latter end of the campaign a certain amount of strategy, advice, and speech writing. And I'd made close friendships with the two principal representatives of the parties that backed Jonah Goldstein, Alex Rose of the Liberal Party and Blank of the Republican Party, and had come to the notice of the politicians in both parties as an attractive and interesting possibility for political life. Opportunities to go further were quick to come. The ensuing year, 1946, was a year of the election for Congress. President Truman was having very considerable difficulties in the country, bringing about the readjustment to a post-war situation, both in terms of rationing and in terms of pulling our troops out of Europe. And, though New York City is traditionally a Democratic city, and a Democratic mayor had just been elected after three terms for LaGuardia, who was at least nominally a Republican, the prospects for congressional races looked good, especially for veterans of World War II. I first considered a race on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, where I was born, but after testing the water in that area, decided that that would be much tougher than other places, though I realized that I would have to run, if I did at all, in an area which was traditionally Democratic. In the course of the mayoralty campaign, I 45, I had struck up a rather good friendship with a man named Samuel Lepler. I'll strike that out. I had struck up a good friendship with a man named Arthur Schwartz, who was then counsel for the State Republican Party. Early in the spring of 1946, Arthur Schwartz called me to his office and introduced me to Samuel Lepler, who was one of the Republican leaders in the area of Washington Heights in Manhattan, and was looking around for a suitable candidate who could really make a successful bid for the congressional seat in that area, which consisted of Washington Heights, an area roughly strung along the Hudson River, roughly from West 137th Street to West 191st Street, and Inwood, which continued from there on to the end of Manhattan Island, a district of about 350,000 people, with a blend almost equally divided between Protestants, Jews, and Catholics. The Protestants residing in the lower end of the district, the Jews in the central Washington Heights part, and the Catholics in the upper Inwood part. I did not mention that the lower part started at West 110th Street in the Hudson River and went up to West 137th Street and included Columbia University, the Union Theological Seminary, the Jewish Theological Seminary, the Riverside Church, the Juilliard School of Music was then located there, and a whole constellation of outstanding cultural and educational institutions, indeed a unique area in all of New York City from that point of view, and therefore very congenial to me. The Liberal Party had by then broken away from the American Labor Party, which was charged to be communist-oriented and then dominated by Vito Marcantonio, a very controversial figure in New York City politics in those years. But the Liberal Party at that time had no place on the ballot, and it was necessary to go out and get petitions signed by citizens for an independent candidacy, which then required 10,000 valid signatures, with many technicalities and pitfalls incident to qualification, in order to get on the ballot and with the permission of the Liberal Party to use their party label as the ballot insignia. Sam Leper and I realized that I wouldn't have a prayer in a district which had not gone Republican for 25 years preceding 1946 in winning as a Republican, and that I had to have and was entitled to, considering my views and what I proposed to advocate if elected, the Liberal Party designation as well. So the first step was to win Alex Rose to this plan. He was very amenable to the idea, but pointed out that I would have to win the local organization, which was then headed by a lawyer, a fine, intelligent man named Morris Shapiro. Indeed, his wife, Rose Shapiro, later became a very prominent member of the Board of Education of the City of New York. I then proceeded along two lines, being assured of the designation on the Republican side, though not the nomination. But, of course, that could be taken care of by the party machinery. But I'm also being assured of the Liberal Party designation, but not the nomination, and that was a much tougher job of bringing in the necessary petition signatures. The signers had to be citizens who had not signed any other petition, either for one of the major parties or any other petition for an independent candidate for Congress. And there were many other detailed qualifications which made great care essential. At that particular moment, too, it appeared that the congressman who had represented the district for years, Blank, would not stand for re-election, and that instead he would be, the Democratic Party nominee would be an assemblyman named Flynn. And I already began to hear murmurings respecting Flynn's understanding of the issues, and especially murmurings as to his views on issues which the Jewish constituents were very deeply interested in, which were how Germany and the liquidation of the Nazi terror would be handled, and second, what compensation the victims of Nazism, thousands of whom lived in the district, would receive, and to what extent the United States government would participate in saying that they received proper reparations. Let it be remembered that not only were their lives taken, the lives of their close kin in the Nazi barbarism, but their Jewish properties were completely and absolutely confiscated. Paragraph. The second line that I pursued was to get from both the Republicans and the Liberal Party leaders a complete list of the people who could have some influence in the area. Being recognized that I had just returned from the war, so that I had been out of New York City for almost 5 years, that I had not lived in Washington Heights. Since I had graduated from high school, and that all of these threads had to somehow be picked up and replaced. The second thing that I undertook was that I got a list from the Liberal Party and Republican Party leaders with whom I was in close touch, of all those people, both within the district and outside the district, who could have any influence on bringing me forward by supporting me in the congressional race. This time fortified with the fact that the Democrats would undoubtedly present a weak candidate in terms of the intellectual institutions in Morningside Heights, the lower end of the district, and in terms of the Jewish community on Washington Heights, and especially the Jewish community of Nazi victims and the kin of Nazi victims who had settled so heavily in Washington Heights that it was popularly called the Fourth Reich, there being an estimated 10,000 families in the area who had suffered so terribly from the Nazi terror. Incidentally, among these families was the family of Dr. Henry Kissinger, who later became such a brilliant and historic Secretary of State. And it is interesting that Dr. Kissinger has told me, as he and I are close friends, that in those days, I was the hero of his mother and father, over, above, and beyond any other American politician. Because I was the man immediately at hand who could, in their eyes, do what was, in a sense, the most intimate for them in the issues and matters which so materially affected them. A paragraph. On the list with which I had been supplied, there were 30 to 40 names. And it is, and I went about the business of seeing each of them methodically. They ranged all the way from the president of Columbia University, blank, and the president of the Jewish Theological Seminary, Dr. Louis Finkelstein, to a group of merchants. Street area, who were rebellious about local conditions and ready to organize to support some new political personality, this group of independent merchants being led by Morris Freiberg, F-R-E-Y-B-E-R-G, Sidney Lovin, L-O-E-V-I-N, and blank, period. In the course of these encounters, I made not only close political allies, but some very long-standing friends. For example, I walked into the office of the president of Yeshiva University, Dr. Samuel Belkin, absolutely unknown to him, and introduced myself, told him the purpose of my call, and we then had a very extended discussion about morality and ethics in politics, about my views as to my own faith. auspicious beginning. Became close friends. I subsequently joined the board of the Yeshiva University and was in many other ways intimately associated with the life of the university, including the foundation and flourishing of the Albert Einstein College of Medicine and many others of its great works. He enjoyed a comparable, though not as close a relationship, with Dr. Louis Finkelstein of the Union Theological Seminary, which came about in exactly the same way, with Blank Van Dusen, who then headed the Union Theological Seminary, and with Father George B. Ford, who was then the Catholic chaplain of Columbia University and was the pastor of an exquisite small church across the street from Columbia University called Corpus Christi. Probably one of the most enlightened Catholic churchmen I have ever encountered. Indeed, in later years, when I was actively shuttling between an Israel fighting for its life and the United States, I took occasion to report my observations to His Holiness Pope Pius Blank. And in that connection, in a private audience, I respectfully suggested that Father Ford was deserving of some advancement in the church. His Holiness then told me that these were matters with which he did not concern himself personally, but that he had heard about Father Ford, that he was delighted to have this confirmation of his good works, and he blessed and gave me his personal missal, M-I-S-S-A-L, to present to Father Ford as a memento of his of His Holiness' interest in Father Ford. In later years, I had occasion to fall out with Father Ford over a housing project, and then to renew our friendship, but more of that anon. The financing paragraph, the financing of campaigns, of course, is critical, and it has always been my policy to do that first, almost literally before I did anything else. That is to have a substantial amount in the bank to support a campaign. On occasion, I have personally borrowed as much as $50,000 to get the campaign off the ground. In the campaign of 1946, I had the invaluable and indispensable assistance of my brother Benjamin, who took on the job of fundraising, and for a congressional race in which the chances had to be less than 50-50, raised $75,000 for me even before I really opened up the campaign. This was a very decisive factor in the ultimate success of the 46 campaign. Now in sort of the heading campaigns, and first item is the campaign of 46. I have said before, and wish to repeat here, my belief that every campaign has a particular turning point, which is brought on, of course, either by the campaigner himself in some idea or proposal or new technique, or in reaction to a position taken by his opponent. And either is vital. television debate. The second television debate, or it may have been the first, between now President Carter and former President Ford, in which President Ford made his enormous gaffe about the fact that the Soviet Union did not control satellites in Eastern Europe, and the way in which President Carter handled the rejoinder, not permitting his answer to be either sarcastic or simplistic, just striking exactly the right note to reflect that he had in that instant, a better grip on the appraisal of Eastern Europe, notwithstanding his inexperience in foreign policy, than the President of the United States, who'd been living with foreign policy throughout a career of over 25 years. So that in recounting my own campaigns, I will try to pick up with and give a special significance to what I consider to be the turning point in any particular campaign, hoping that this may be of use to others who will be, in the generations ahead, campaigning for political office. In the campaign paragraph, in the campaign of 1946, there was clearly an unease about the Democratic Party candidate, Assemblyman Flynn, even among the staunchest Democrats, as evidenced by my experience with the Jewish retailers on Washington Heights, to which I've already referred. It's absolutely essential that I exploit this advantage, and I proceeded to do so until it grew into a full-fledged rebellion. Paragraph. Incidentally, the American Labor Party, in its fight with the Liberal Party, once I had achieved the Liberal Party line, also fielded a candidate, and that was by no means unhelpful. Paragraph. I felt that the most striking way in which I could show that I was not taking the voters for granted, and that was my constant theme, prove in this new post-war world what you're going to do, and don't rely upon drawing around you the mantle of the Franklin D. Roosevelt Seniors, the Al Smiths, the Herbert Lehmans, and having the public assume that because you're of their party, that makes you the best man. The way to do all of that was to bring the campaign to the voters very aggressively, and I found the two techniques to be singularly successful. One was the street corner meeting, replete with questions and answers from the crowd. We got so that I could have as many as 1,500 to 2,500 people attend a street corner rally on the corner of 181st Street and St. Nicholas Avenue, or on the corner of 181st Street and Broadway, and keep them standing for 30 minutes to three quarters of an hour while I spoke, and then another 30 minutes to three quarters of an hour while I answered questions. Questions, obviously, in a thoroughly democratic district, started to be hostile, but I was able to generally turn the crowd around, and gradually, of course, my own partisans dominated in the crowds, having been convinced by these very open and frank discussions. The other technique was the technique of canvassing. We enlisted about 200 young people from high school to go through building after building in a crash program and given areas night after night grabbing literature and ringing doorbells to say one simple sentence. Support Jack Javits, a new man, a veteran, who'll do something for this district instead of taking it for granted. And the importance of the canvassing was, first, that I engaged in it myself, canvassing buildings personally, and secondly, that the presentation to be made was absolutely standard and would not allow of any deviation, nor of any debate or discussion. It was simply a matter of getting the message home, planting the idea that there was a new man running, and then leaving it to the individual voter to